Thank you very much, Gary, for that for the introduction, and thank you for your great work and leadership at the Public Utilities Commission here in South Dakota. And in all your career in public service, the many things I've had the opportunity, as you said, to work with you for a good many years, and so I appreciate the leadership that you provide. I want to thank all of you for being here today. I want to thank particularly the National Wind Coordinating Collaborative, the American Wind Energy Association, and all of the people in this room who have put together what I think is an incredible conference that brings together all the experts in this industry and really helps provide valuable information and ideas on the current state of wind energy industry in South Dakota and across the nation. You know, I have to say that they say there are three things that it's impossible to do. One is to climb a building leaning toward you. The second one is to kiss a girl leaning away from you. And the third one is to talk to a group of people who know more about the subject than you do. And I can say I've never tried to climb a building leaning toward me, but I have on a few occasions, this being one of them, tried to talk to a group of people who know more about the subject matter than I do. But I do appreciate the chance to just give you a little bit of insights about what's happening at the federal level, some of the policy initiatives that we are involved with, and how they pertain to what, in my view, is a great opportunity, not only for South Dakota, but for America when it comes to wind energy. As you probably have surmised by now, Congress is out of session this week. Usually that's an applause line. Actually, some people do applaud when I say that simply because they think when we're not in session, we can't do anything to you. But we are out of session, but we're going back in next week, and we're going in at a time when there's a lot of legislation piled up at the end of the year, a lot of things that we need to be working on, and frankly, a lot of cynicism in the American public about Congress and our inability to effectively get things done. There are some surveys that have been out lately. I've seen a number of them that they always ask the congressional approval rating, you know, what's the approval, what do you think of the work that Congress is doing? And one of the surveys I saw had the congressional approval rating down to 11%. And my friend John McCain says when you get down to that level, you're talking about paid staff and blood relatives. And I think when you factor in the margin of error into that, it could be a lot lower. But I think there's a real frustration with people in this country because there are so many important issues that face us and challenges that face us that aren't being dealt with at the federal level simply because politics has gotten in the way. And it would be my hope in the two or three weeks that we have remaining in this year and as Congress goes back into session next week that we will be able to move forward positively on legislation that will enable us to move forward with regard to energy, renewable energy, fuels, wind, all those things, that we can get a farm bill passed that will give some certainty to our producers as they begin to make planning decisions for next year, and in all the other provisions that are in the farm bill as well, some of which I'll touch on in just a little bit. As Gary mentioned, I did grow up, according to South Dakota State University, in the windiest city in South Dakota. Some people don't think of Myrtle as a city. It's about 600 people. But they have some towers north of town where they test wind. They've got about 13 of these places around the state, and according to the data that's been compiled as a result of that research, Myrtle is the windiest town, at least, in the state of South Dakota. And I can anecdotally attest to that, having grown up there. Many of you who grew up in small communities across South Dakota, no matter where you live, are acquainted with the impact that the wind has. But certainly on the western prairies out where I grew up, it seems like the wind blows all the time. And I remember a story my older brother Rich tells. My brother Rich graduated high school in 1967, but in 1966 we were playing Kadoka for homecoming in a football game. And it was a cold, windy day, as is typically the case in the fall in South Dakota, and even more the case in places like western South Dakota. But my brother tells a story about dropping back into punt formation to punt the ball. And he was on his own 20-yard line. And the wind evidently was blowing so hard that when he punted the ball and it went up into the air, the wind caught it and took the football through the goalposts behind him. So I know for a fact that we are the windiest place perhaps in the entire world. But with that, and some of the annoyances that we've experienced over the years because of the wind, we're always cussing the wind when you're trying to play golf or play some other sport. Or in my particular case, I've got two daughters who run track, and we spend a lot of time in the spring months at track meets, and it seems like invariably the wind's blowing. But we have an opportunity to take what many of us have grown up with and continue to be or it considered to be something that was a little bit of an annoyance to us and turn it into something that's an incredible benefit and asset to this state. And I think that's what this conference is all about. And frankly, it's what everything that we're doing right now with regard to renewable energy is all about. And that is to put South Dakota, our state, in a position to benefit the people of the state economically from the resources that we have here. And we have an abundance of them. And the reason that's so important is not just because South Dakota's economy benefits, and it does. It benefits enormously. You look at what's happened with ethanol, renewable fuels. But it's also important for a lot of other reasons, because renewable energy, homegrown energy, reduces emissions, reduces greenhouse gases. If you're someone who's concerned about climate change, the use of renewable energy like ethanol, whether it's corn-based or cellulosic, wind energy, all those things reduce carbon emissions. And perhaps just as importantly, if not more importantly, it lessens our dependence upon foreign sources of energy. I am extremely concerned about the future of this country and how hostage we are held to nations around the world that have the energy that we need to survive, and we get 65% of our petroleum from outside the United States, from countries that have very hostile intentions toward our country, and in fact, in many cases, use those petrodollars, which are pouring into their economies, to turn around and fund terrorist organizations that attack Americans. It's the equivalent of a terrorist attack, or a terrorist tax, I should say, because we're paying these countries around the world, foreign governments are being enriched simply because we haven't gotten ourselves weaned off of the energy supply that we so desperately need to drive our economy. And some people don't realize this, but if you even look at, everybody assumes that we have an infinite amount of coal, and we do in this country. We've got coal, they say, for several hundred years. But we're getting coal from outside the United States. Where? From Venezuela. From Hugo Chavez. We get petroleum from Hugo Chavez. We get petroleum from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran, in places like that. It makes absolutely no sense that we continue to import our energy supplies, and we have those energy sources right here, and they're homegrown, they're renewable, they're things like corn, cellulosic ethanol, as I mentioned. And if you don't think that hasn't had an impact, in South Dakota alone in the year 2008, we will be producing over 1 billion gallons of ethanol. Now, we will reach at the end of this year, the end of 2007, 7.5 billion gallons produced nationally. Now, you should know that in 2005, we passed the Energy Policy Act, and that act called for 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol by the year 2012. We are 5 years ahead of schedule in terms of what we have been able to do to lessen that dependence upon foreign sources of oil. Now, some people may say that 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol isn't a lot relative to 140 billion gallons of gasoline that's consumed in this country every year. But think about it in these terms. It has replaced 170 million barrels of oil and saved us $11 billion, $11 billion that we would have been sending to Iran or Venezuela or someplace like that. We've kept it right here at home. That is an incredible story, ladies and gentlemen. And that's a story, a success that we need to build on when it comes to wind energy. Now, a lot of what's happened with the renewable fuels industry in this country has been driven to some degree by policies that have been put in place that have encouraged investment into renewable energy. The renewable fuel standard that passed back in 2005 was the first time ever as a matter of policy that we have put in place a requirement that a certain amount of ethanol be used in this country. And as I said, we ramped up to it very quickly. 1 billion gallons right here in South Dakota, 7.5 billion gallons nationally. The energy bill that is moving through the Congress right now calls for, in the Senate version of it at least, calls for 36 billion gallons by the year 2022. My guess is we'll end up, now we're in conference with the House, didn't have an RFS, somewhere at 20 billion gallons by the year 2015, most of which will be corn-based, about 15 billion gallons, and the additional 5.5 billion gallons will be advanced biofuels like cellulosic ethanol. But we just flat need to make a decision. As federal, state, local policymakers in this country, working with the private sector, with input from the private sector, that we are going to become energy independent. And we're going to do it in a way that lessens greenhouse gases and carbon emissions, and that lessens our dependence upon foreign sources of energy. I think this is a very exciting time for South Dakota. I think it's a very exciting time for America. And we need to take full advantage of the opportunity that's ahead of us. Now, what I want to do is share with you briefly kind of where we are with regard to wind energy and where I think we need to be going. And I know you've covered a lot of ground already during this conference. But South Dakota and the United States, we'll start with, ranks third if you look at the world production of wind energy. Europe is clearly ahead. We're third. And as I said, I think we've got some catching up to do. But frankly, this is an opportunity for the United States, and we're seeing this industry grow at a very dramatic rate. If you look at the last 5 years, I've seen different statistics, but the lowest number I've seen is that we've seen 22% annual growth in wind energy here in the United States. Now, that's something that, of course, we want to see continue. We're still lagging behind other developed countries around the world, but we have an opportunity to change that. If you look at the state of South Dakota relative to states around us, South Dakota also lags in terms of the amount of wind energy that we're producing. Now, that's changing as well because we've got a number of plants right now or farms, projects, whatever you want to call it, under construction, one of which I visited the day before yesterday. But South Dakota on that map, and this is as of the end of 2006, had 44 megawatts. If you look at Iowa and Minnesota, even North Dakota, that's the part that really bothers me. We need to increase our production so we start catching up with where our neighboring states are. And, of course, a lot of that has to do, again, with the policies that we put in place, much of which at the federal level, at least over time, has been inconsistent. We have effective policies, but they're inconsistent policies, and we need to change that. So South Dakota is, as I said, lags behind other states in our neighborhood and even those in other parts of the country, places like Texas and California, which are the leaders right now in terms of wind energy produced in the United States of America. For years, we've struggled with some of these problems, and there are all kinds of issues when you start talking about the need for more wind energy, most of them related to transmission. You've got property rights issues with landowners. You have interconnection and integration issues for commercial wind farms, cost recovery mechanisms for transmission providers, and in the end, you want to provide stable electric rates for end consumers. And those are all issues that have to be addressed by local and national leaders. And that's why input from experts and industry is absolutely important in terms of forming policy solutions that solve a lot of these issues. Today's event is important. The debate that's occurring here, the discussion that's occurring here, and coming up with solutions and devising strategies for moving forward. As part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005, and I want to touch on this because I think it's important, one of the provisions that was in there was a recognition that we need more transmission. And so in the Energy Policy Act of 2005, Congress addressed part of that transmission infrastructure constraint issue by creating what they call national interest electric transmission corridors. And what that meant was that Congress gave new authority to the Department of Energy and to FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to site large interstate transmission lines. Under that provision, the Department of Energy is required to identify geographic areas with significant transmission congestion and constraint problems. Within these geographic regions or national corridors, FERC has new siting authority that supplements existing state authority. If a transmission provider cannot receive permits for siting a transmission line from the relevant state agencies, the provider may apply to FERC for approval at the federal level. FERC is still required to give public notice of the potential transmission line and conduct the appropriate environmental impact statements. FERC must also consider alternative routes and the impacts that such transmission lines may have on landowners and local communities. However, it did create a new streamlined process at the federal level that acknowledges that our national grid is a matter of interstate commerce while respecting the important role that state agencies play in the transmission project approval process. It's also important to note that under this policy, state agencies will still have primary responsibility for resolving transmission problems. New authority at the federal level will hopefully resolve some of the problems associated with siting and constructing large transmission lines across state borders. These national corridors will streamline the siting process and will greatly enhance transmission where transmission constraints currently exist. Now, having said that, there's one point I need to make, and that is that the Energy Policy Act of 2005 directed the Department of Energy to establish these national corridors only in areas with large populations and energy demands that currently strain the electrical grid. Accordingly, the Department of Energy designated, and this just happened recently on October 2nd of this year, two national corridors. The Mid-Atlantic region and the Southwest region were both designated as national corridors due to the rapid population growth that those and load growth that those areas have seen. The Dakotas and Minnesota were designated what they call conditional congestion areas, which means that transmission congestion would exist if our renewable energy sources were developed. However, under the current law, conditional congestion areas do not have the same transmission siting authority as national interest electric transmission corridors. The amendment that I offered to the energy bill that's moving through the Congress right now, the Clean Energy Act of 2007, would establish clean energy corridors. This amendment builds upon the Energy Policy Act of 2005 by expanding that definition of national interest electric transmission corridors to include conditional congestion areas with high potential for renewable electricity production. If clean renewable electricity is going to be a national priority, we've got to have a national solution to this transmission problem. By allowing the private sector and the regulatory agencies to work together in a more efficient manner, my Clean Corridors Amendment is an effective solution to the problem of moving renewable energy from rural areas to urban centers with high energy demands. And I have to say that I use this analogy because I think it helps people understand what we need. But we need the equivalent of an interstate highway system for wind. That is what we need. And we've got to come up with some policies that will help us solve these transmission problems. If we don't, we are never going to realize the promise and the potential that wind energy presents for South Dakota and areas that surround us. Now, this particular map right here shows you where the wind resources are in the United States. And the reason I wanted you to show this is because it shows how concentrated these resources are in areas that are sparsely populated, in areas with low energy demands. The map shows the wind energy generation potential that's based on wind patterns throughout the nation. And as you can see, the map points out what we all already know, and that is South Dakota has the best land-based wind in the entire nation. However, we lack the capacity to move this energy to more populated areas of the Midwest and beyond. So that's what the wind looks like. Now, if you take solar, again, the point very simply is this. If you look at where the solar resources are concentrated here in the United States, much of it is located in the desert southwest. And increasing the accessibility of solar energy in population areas such as the western United States is going to require large transmission lines. But again, you're looking at large states, sparsely populated rural areas of the country. That's where the concentration of these renewable energy sources is. And that means that to get that to the places where the people live and where the energy demand is, we've got to have transmission capability. The final slide shows where geothermal resources are in the United States. And once again, it is in western, large, sparsely populated rural areas of the country. And it is so important if we're going to take full advantage of these energy resources that we can get this transmission issue addressed. Now, it is my hope that when Congress returns next week, that we can act on energy legislation. There is an agreement coming together on part of the energy bill, the part dealing with the renewable fuel standard and CAFE standards and other things. It seems to be gaining traction out there and some forward momentum that I think will enable us to pass it. But the other pieces of the bill, which deal with some of the wind energy issues, is going to be moved separately. I hope that we can get the critical mass behind that to move that as well. But as of right now, it would appear, at least in the short term, that the one piece of it is going to move right away and the second piece may come later. So we're going to work as hard as we can to make sure that these energy bills move forward. It is just so important to America that we do that. If we don't continue to develop these energy sources that get us away from this terrible dependence that we have upon foreign sources of energy, we are going to put future generations in great peril. One other bill I'll mention that's moving right now, which has some impact on the energy industry as well, and some of you may say, oh yeah, right, is the Farm Bill. But we have a farm bill right now that we hope to get teed up next week in the Senate. It's passed the House already. It's been sort of stalled in the Senate, like so many things. People who watch Congress, I think, have a great sense of frustration at how Congress works. But it looks like now there is a breakthrough on the farm bill that will enable us to get it passed next week. And there are some very good energy provisions in the farm bill as well. Many of them deal with renewable fuels, cellulosic ethanol. I had worked hard and helped author many of the provisions in the energy title of that bill dealing with renewable fuels. But there also are a couple provisions that are important that have to do with transmission construction. And it's because I think national energy policy and agricultural policy are becoming so entwined. And you look at what's affecting agriculture in this country, what's affecting our rural communities anymore, it's almost as much about energy as it is about farm bills and farm policy and farm legislation. And so these issues are becoming increasingly entwined. But the first thing the Senate version of the farm bill does, it includes a tax provision that would allow taxpayers to deduct easement payments from an electric utility or electric transmission company that locates an electricity transmission pole on a line of 230 kilovolts or more. These payments are currently included in a taxpayer's income for federal income tax purposes. This proposal, if included in the final version of the farm bill, will reduce the transmission costs for the transmission company and increase the financial benefit for local landowners. The Senate farm bill also addresses an issue faced by rural co-ops who use federal financing to build transmission lines. This provision allows the Department of Agriculture to make low-interest loans available for the electric generation of renewable energy resources to rural residents and for the transmission of energy from renewable energy sources. And finally, the Senate Farm Bill creates a new 30% investment tax credit capped at $4,000 per year for qualified residential and commercial applications of small wind energy property not to exceed 100 kilowatts. Those are things that I think, and you look at big wind, large-scale wind projects, we also need to encourage small wind projects in this country, and having appropriate economic incentives and tax incentives in place, I think, will help accomplish that. So those are some things that are included, believe it or not, in the farm bill that's currently moved through the Congress. Couple that, as I said, with the production tax credit, the 2 cents per kilowatt production tax credit extended to the year 2012 that's included in the energy bill, the Clean Corridors Amendment that I talked about earlier, and the Clean Renewable Energy Bond Program, which is extended to the year 2012 in the Energy Bill, which is something that a lot of our public power providers are able to take advantage of because they can't use the tax credit, the production tax credit. Those initiatives, all moving together, I think, at the same time, present a unique opportunity. But it's really important that the folks in this room who are involved with this industry on a day-to-day basis stay engaged in those discussions, continue to advocate for and bring attention and educate people in Washington, D.C., policymakers, and here at the state level about the importance of putting these policies in place, working effectively between state, local leaders, or state, federal, and local leaders to make sure that we are doing everything we can to advance the cause of wind energy in this country. These are unique times. These are historic times. These are times that present great challenges but great opportunities. And I have a fundamental belief that the American people, left to their own devices, operating with the ingenuity and the entrepreneurship and taking advantage of the latest technologies, are going to close the gap with foreign countries around the world whose energy production exceeds ours, and right here in South Dakota, that we're going to close the gap with our neighboring states who are ahead of us when it comes to wind energy production. South Dakota has the wind, and what we need to do is make sure that South Dakota is benefiting from that wind. And that comes down on a fundamental level to many of the things that I've just talked about, but it deals with this whole issue of transmission and dealing with making sure that where the wind is, where the generation is, where the production is able to take us to where it's needed. And that involves addressing these impediments in the area of transmission. I appreciate, as I said, this conference, your participation in it. I appreciate everything that you are doing to advance the cause of wind energy here in this country and renewable energy. It is so important, again, not only to the economy of South Dakota and to the future of South Dakota with regard to the opportunities that it presents for future generations of young people who want to stay in our state, but it also is critically important as we look at the issues of climate change, as we look at the issues of lessening that dependence that we have on foreign sources of energy. So thank you very much for being here. May God continue to bless your great work. And with that, I'd be happy to take a couple of questions for those of you who haven't fallen asleep yet. If you have...